You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. The show with nonstop chirps.
Because you know how many people watched that Pens Islanders game?
Yeah.
Seven.
I hear you.
Seven people watched that game.
I watched that game.
Oh, my God. You know, you're the one exception. I was going to say, anybody that tries to break down that Pens Islanders game,
they're full of crap, and
you're a liar.
Honestly, go stand at that wall and talk to it.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Brian Windhorst will join us from ESPN. I had a game two tonight, Raptors Magic. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Tip off at 8 p.m. And, you know, we'll ask Brian about a number of things, including Zion Williamson officially declaring for the draft as if that was ever up for debate. But
you knew that was coming.
What would be in the NBA's best interest in terms of the lottery?
Like, who gets it?
Yeah. Like, I think it's the Knicks.
I was just going to say, what about the Knicks?
You need them to start doing something.
Right.
You know, like, I know I love goofing on them. I don't even trust that it would work, even with Zion Williamson, because of the owner.
It's goofing on them. It's just, it's...
They're pathetic.
Well, they've earned it.
They're a pathetic franchise, and it's sad because they're such a great, historic franchise.
Yeah, and if you look at Edmonton, I think you go to the Knicks, and it's the same thing. The owner is out of his mind.
Even worse, like as bad as Daryl Cates may be, James Dolan is the worst.
I think he's another level because, you know, he's very visual in getting in fights with fans, kicking former players out of the building. Like, I don't see any of that with Cates.
I haven't heard him getting into brawls. Like, he gives former players jobs.
Right.
He doesn't kick them out of the building.
Right.
Yeah, you rarely see him during a year. Like, I don't ever see
Charles
him.
Oakley.
I just see him at the draft, Cates.
Charles Oakley would have a 10-year deal if he...
Oh, if he was an Edmonton Oiler?
Yeah. Like
if Charles Oakley was on the dynasty team in the 80s,
right,
he'd be somewhere on the Oilers' payroll
But you're right. But it's not... You know, Dolan is kicking guys out of the building. He's fighting with, he's banning fans from the building. Like,
it's
that's another
joke.
Level of craziness.
Yeah. It's a joke, is what it is. So Brian will join us here in a moment. Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider, will be in studio at 6:25. Bob was down at Scotiabank last night. And now get his take on the Leaf-Bruins series. Today it's, you know, the Leafs and this series is such a good example of the emotional roller coaster of a playoff series. And the same thing is going to apply with the Raptors. Let's say the Raptors just blow the doors off Orlando tonight.
Right.
Kawhi goes off for 40. Kyle Lowry is, you know, shoots 60% from the field and looks great. Everyone's going to be like, there's the Raptors.
But that's what you're expecting, though.
I get more of the emotional roller coaster from the fan base. Like, when I walk into my lunch place after the loss in Boston, it's like, they're going to get us now, aren't they? They're going to crush us. Then they win last. We got a chance. We got a chance, don't we? We're going to take it to them. I'm like, settle down.
But you start to see, you're right. It's the games are spaced every 2 days. So, you know, lose Saturday if you're the Leafs. And the Sunday, it's a little bit of reflecting. Okay, how, you know, what's going to come Monday? Now you're looking forward to Monday. Now today, you're like, okay, if they play like that, now if they played like that in two games, or now you can see how they're going to win this series if they win. And if they lose, it's going to be the other way.
Well, you also don't have enough time
to process too much.
To process it or to be sensible.
Right.
You know, like...
Can you imagine back-to-back if they were playing again tonight?
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is you've got to get to four wins quick.
Right.
So if the Leafs, I'm not saying that, you know, it's ever stable in this market. It's not. You know, it's an emotional powder keg all the time, and everyone's got a different take and a different approach, and I think that's what makes it such a great market for sports in general, because it applies to the Raptors and the Blue Jays as well.
Right.
But, you know, if the Leafs lose four in a row in November, it doesn't really matter. You can keep an even keel and an even head and say, well, look, they're still doing this right and that right, and it's four games and there's still 65 left to go and they'll get back on track. You don't have the ability to take a step back in the playoffs and say, hey, if it doesn't work this week, they'll get them next week. There is no next week.
This is your week.
So that's what makes playoffs feel so different, and that's why it is so different, and that's why it's so great, because every day is a new storyline. You know, and let's be honest, we're guilty of it too. If you went back and listened to the show on Friday, and then listened to the show yesterday, and now listen to the show today, we've done three different shows based on three different games, and the mood has been totally different in this room.
But it's also, there has been three different big storylines. Yesterday was all Kadri, regardless of how, I mean, he may have saved, technically, us, or us is the wrong word, saved the narrative of how ugly it was Saturday night, because all we focused on was...
Put a shield up for the team a little bit.
A little bit. Because it wasn't, I mean, you know, it was a different game. Yeah, there was some narrative, the reffing, I get that. But nobody showed up other than Freddie Anderson and Nazem Kadri. And Kadri got himself in some trouble.
Right. We'll get back into that with Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, later in the hour. Game two tonight, Raptors Magic. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. To tee that up, spin you around the NBA playoffs, here is ESPN's NBA insider, Brian Windhorst. Brian, as we look back on game one of the Raptors series, obviously it didn't go their way. But from your perspective as a reporter, as an insider, what was the bigger story? Kyle Lowry being pointless or Kawhi Leonard only playing 33 minutes?
Both. I think, you know, I don't think, you know, it was Nick's first playoff game and he may not have had the cleanest operation that he wanted. Although I think part of him taking the blame for not getting Lowry more involved was kind of trying to take some of the attention off of him. It won't work, but he was trying. At the end of the day, if Gasol hits the shot in the corner, which is a 50-50 shot for him probably, and Augustine misses that shot at the top of the key, which is maybe 40-60 considering everything, it's a completely different conversation. So because of the Raptors' history, they bring that to the table. Unfortunately, that's the reality. But I don't look at the Raptors as like a five-alarm fire right now. I think they'll play better, and I think they'll even the series, and then it'll get interesting to see how they play on the road.
We were talking about this earlier. A player of Kawhi's ilk, does he not go up to the coach and just say, I'm not sure what's going on, but why aren't you playing me more? I was kind of not at that level in my profession, which was hockey, but I would say to the coach, what the hell are you doing? Why am I sitting here?
Well, I don't think it's Kawhi's MO to do that in any situation on the bench. That's not who he is. You know, just the rotations got off a little bit, and they were behind. And I think that there was some pressure over there. And I just think it's one of those things that's a mistake, and they'll move on from it. And it's not going to define the playoffs. To me, I was just so impressed with the way he was delivering down the stretch. I was just very excited. Like, this is what they got him for. You know, the problem is, again, you guys and all the Raptors fans have this scar tissue of these previous disappointments. I typically don't overreact to game one, and it very rarely defines a series, but I realize that telling you that is a hard sell after game one certainly defined the series with the Cavs last year. So I get why there's concern, but I, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, my worry level for the Raptors is pretty low, like maybe 2-3 right now.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. They're 2-14 lifetime as a franchise in game one. And it's insane, and they've gone on to win a lot of series, especially in recent years, at least when they're avoiding playing LeBron. And last time I checked, LeBron's not playing tonight.
That's correct.
But you talk about a couple of shots going in or missing, for that matter, and the narrative changes or the conversation changes. I think, you know, it gets back to that first question I posed to you, because the past couple of days, and I guess this has been an ongoing theme to an extent all year, because of load management with Kawhi, because Kyle's had some injury problems, this idea that maybe Lowry and Kawhi cannot coexist. You know, they can't find a rhythm together when they're on the court. Well, they have to. And the fact that we're still wondering that, what does that say about the whole season for the Raptors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a fair question. I feel like Kyle had a really good season. Other than the injuries, I felt like he existed relatively well with him. And I actually considered him for my third team All-NBA. I mean, he didn't make it, but he was on the list. I felt like he did a lot of good things this year. I was, you know, there was a lot of nights where I watched the Raptors and were like, man, are these guys good? And one of the things I really like about them is that they're more diverse in the way they can play. So that when you get into pressure situations in the playoffs, you have Danny Green, you have Marc Gasol, you have Siakam, who is a completely different player than he was before. And that's the way I feel. That's an opinion that I developed over watching them for 5 or 6 months. And it didn't work in game one, but I don't think that that's a complete referendum. I still am going to believe that Kyle and Kawhi can play well together because they were awesome together when they played together most of the season. It's maybe not the most perfect fit of all time, but I honestly believe they both want it to work.
With Brian Windhorst from the NBA on ESPN. It's Raptors Magic Game 2 tonight right here on TSN Radio. You can watch it on TSN, tip-off at 8. Last night, history was made at the Oracle, and a lot of history has been made out in Golden State over the past 4 years. Usually it's positive history for the home team.
Right.
It wasn't. The Clippers, they came back. They were down 31 points.
I know.
Is this a wake-up call for Golden State, or, I mean, are they just going to scoff at it and say, who cares, we're still going to win this, no problem?
Yeah, I think the real difficulty with Golden State is it's hard to beat them 4 out of 7 times. To win this game, it took a historic comeback. That's one. Okay, what else do they have in the bag, you know? I will say this. My biggest concern about the Warriors this year is their togetherness. They just don't have the same togetherness they've had as a team for the last few years. It's one of the reasons why they brought Andrew Bogut back in, because his personality is really effusive and he brings people together. And it was something that their front office was worried about. And so, to me, that's, you know, the only question is, will there be any animosity that develops? You know, will they be too emotional? I think beating these guys 4 out of 7 is incredibly difficult. It takes special circumstances for it to happen. We saw it happen one time in the last, 4 years. This is 5 years. And it took a historic comeback with suspensions and injuries and all kinds of stuff like that. So the difficulty with playing the Clippers is they don't have an off switch because they don't have the luxury of not playing at full speed all the time. So when you play them, you always have to finish. I don't care if you're up 40. They're not going to change their speed. It's the way that they have to play to keep their head above water. And I think the Warriors just got caught in that last night. It was an incredibly enjoyable game to watch. And frankly, I hope it happens again. I'd love to see the Warriors get pushed to 6 games in this first round.
How frustrating is it for you and your colleagues? I believe Kevin Durant refused to talk to the media last night. I mean, isn't he one of the guys they want to hear from?
Yes. what I would say is this. One, there's a $24 billion, all figures U.S., contract, and part of doing your job for the money that you get is to talk to the media. Not because you have to do anything for us individually, but because it's part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And, earlier this year, Kevin went, I think, 11 days without talking to the media. And really, nobody did anything about it. When I was covering the Miami Heat, the Pat Riley rule was you talk to the media every day. And LeBron James talked to the media every day. And Dwayne Wade talks to the media every day because that is what your expectation is as part of your role in the league. Now, I would never say anything bad about the Warriors organization. I think that they have a class organization, one of the best run teams I've ever seen. But they let them get away with that for the last 11 days. And I think it's emblematic of the way they generally have operated with Durant, which is they kind of just let him freelance and he's slowly sort of gone on his own path. And, you know, one of the things that you see spending any time around the Warriors or anything what you hear about the Warriors is just how a little bit disassociated he is with their operation right now. And that's one of the reasons why they're seriously worried about whether he wants to come back after this season. And like at the end of the day, if he doesn't want to talk to the media, whatever, it's not going to break anyone's heart, but it is emblematic of the way he's sort of gone off on his own path this year. And the Warriors have not been able to rein that in.
With Brian Windhorst, sticking with that theme, you know, business and what's in the best decision for the league, for the teams, for the players. We were talking about Zion Williamson earlier and him declaring for the draft, which was a foregone conclusion. But in my opinion, it's in the best interest for the league that the New York Knicks win this lottery. You know, they're a joke of a franchise right now, but they're a very historic franchise in the biggest city, biggest media market in the world. How would you feel about that in terms of what the league's, you know, best interest would be in terms of the lottery balls falling for Zion Williams. Well, Zion Williams.
Right, so I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Akron, Ohio. I grew up in an environment where there was a middle market baseball team, which lost a lot of stars over the years. So my background is to support middle markets. Okay. That said, as an employee of ESPN, I will tell you that the NBA will never be its healthiest if the Lakers and Knicks are not healthy. It also helps for the Bulls and Celtics to be healthy. The Bulls are not healthy right now. So from that standpoint, from a straight business standpoint, it would be the best for the NBA as an overall health for New York, Chicago, or the Lakers to win the lottery and get Zion Williamson, just as it was best for the health of the PGA Tour that Tiger Woods won the Masters. It may have been a cool story had Xander Schauffele won it, but the best thing for the league was Tiger winning. The best thing for the NBA would be the New York Knicks or Lakers winning. That said, the Knicks have been in the lottery for decades, and they haven't won since 1984. And this year, they have a better, much higher percentage chance of getting the fifth pick than they do of any of the top four picks. And the lottery odds were flattened out for this exact reason, to try to avoid this tanking situation. And the Knicks, as the worst record in the league, have the worst chance of any team that's ever had the worst record in the lottery to get him. So the reality that that's going to happen is still pretty low, and so they better have other plan B, C, D, and don't expect to get bailed out by luck.
I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but so you're not of the belief that I think it was the Ewing draft that the envelopes were
frozen.
One was colder, and one of the corners was bent, so you don't see that happening for the Knicks this time around?
Well, you know, obviously a lot of people have theories, but no matter what happened at that time, where I think I was in first grade, the lottery now is viewed by everybody and handled by like an accounting firm and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. even if they wanted to, and put it this way, if you know they've had many opportunities, they had the Durant lottery, they had the LeBron lottery, they had the Anthony Davis lottery. There's a lot of opportunities for chicanery, and it never actually happened.
Well, we know that they made sure to doctor the Andrea Bargnani lottery sweepstakes.
That's right.
Because the Raptors, had to have them. The Raps had to pick first overall for the first time in franchise history.
Wow. Who did they pass up on in that?
Well, it was Aldridge who went two. Rudy Gay was in that draft as well. It wasn't a great draft, but that's the one they win. It's Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah.
Anyway, enjoy the rest of the playoffs. Thank you for doing this, Brian.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
There's Brian Windhorst from ESPN.
Now, there's a lot of conspiracy theory out there.
The Ewing one has held strong for a long time. Like 35 years, that one has been hovering around the NBA. But sticking with that theme, that conversation about Durant and him not being available, that's circulating around Toronto with Nazem Kadri right now. And I know the fans could not care less. They could not care less. But he was not made available after the game, after game two, which was...
Do you not understand?
That's standard because of the suspension.
I understand it from the league.
Yeah.
But the media, they requested him. He played in the game.
Yeah.
And he didn't come out. So, okay, they made that decision. But he practiced today, and I believe, I read on Twitter, it is a league rule, whether you're suspended, hurt, or whatever, if you practice, you're supposed to be made available.
Okay, then that
and
one...
today he wasn't?
And he was not. He's not made available until after the suspension is over. They're gonna file a complaint. Like the PWHA or whatever it is, they will file a complaint.
That one kind of... I mean, at some point...
Why can't he speak today?
But that's what
why not get it out
come
of
out
the way now?
And go and disarm people with the truth. Like, hey, I made a mistake. I'm going to be ready if we make it to round two.
Right.
I'm going to be supporting these guys in any way and move on with it.
Well, and if you say it now, when you come back, it's done.
Exactly, it's done. Like, the longer that
that's all you're getting, though. You know that, right? Like, if you want to bitch and complain...
Dude,
like,
I'm not down there doing
say,
it.
I made a mistake. I'm paying for it. Next question.
I'm not the guy in the scrum. I don't care. I'm not saying that I care.
For all the people that are saying, this guy's got to speak, you got to get him out, that's what's coming.
Okay, but what did you think Kevin Durant was going to say last night? He's going to give you cliches as well, but should he not have been speaking? Right? Like, that's the game. Like, you know, that's the way it works. I know a lot of athletes are like, leave me alone. But
this isn't because I'm in the media.
It was a bigger picture thing. I was reading this article saying this guy wants to be known as the best player in the NBA. although he does not want to speak after a crushing loss like that.
Right.
So I don't know what he's thinking. It was kind of more of a bigger picture.
Well, and I also, to be fair, that was, I think, Durant saying, I'm not talking. Kadri may be like, I'm willing to go and talk. I think the team has said,
it's
not in your best interest to speak.
Exactly. But
I don't care. I'm not the guy down there fielding audio and in the scrum. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just telling you what's going on.
I just feel like it's tough. And this isn't from a media member saying it. It's just the longer it goes, the worse look it is.
I would get him out there today again. Exactly. And then it's over. Exactly. When he comes back, no one's going to ask him about it.
Because people are going to be focused on tomorrow's game.
Right.
Like, you go out today, now tomorrow's game, it's about the game.
The suspension's in.
Exactly.
Like, it's over. He's done for the rest of the series.
That's the decision they've made. Live with it, and we'll hear from him at some point. He's not going to say anything anyways.
No. More than likely, he won't. Although, you never know with Nazem Kadri.
That's potential.
There's a chance he might slide something in. Yeah. Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us on the four games in the playoffs tonight and get his take on where the Leafs are at now. Through three games, they're up 2-1. Bobby Mack was at Scotiabank last night. So back into the Leafs Bruins. Bob McKenzie in studio next. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Raptors game night. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN. Game two down at Scotiabank. Four games in the NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Maple Leafs in a very good spot, up 2-1.
Isn't it the NHL playoffs?
It doesn't really matter.
I think it's the NHL playoffs. What's wrong with that?
Well, Bob McKenzie's our resident historian.
Yes.
Do you have a problem with someone calling it the NHL playoffs?
Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's for the Stanley Cup, so that's why.
Yeah, but it's the Stanley Cup playoffs for me. But that's just me. That's.
Would you be like disappointed in hearing a colleague call it the NHL playoffs multiple times?
Technically, that's correct, but the thing that makes hockey unique
is
getting
at?
Stanley
you
Cup.
Say it that?
No, I said it multiple times last week, and I was told abruptly.
You got a stern talking to.
It doesn't matter. But it's the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It was a stern talking to.
So, you know, Bob's
a Stanley Cup.
No, it wasn't Bob.
No,
Bob didn't send me an email.
From Noodle? Like, who would say something?
It wasn't from me either. Believe me.
No, it wasn't a stern talking to. It was pointed out that Stanley Cup playoffs is technically the proper term. And we are journalists, and we're professionals on this show.
That's how I think that's how the league brands it as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah. They always have.
It's fair. It's just.
I just don't think it matters that much.
I never thought. We were talking about it that one day on the show, and I didn't even think twice about it. You're like, yeah, the NHL playoffs are here. Like, we're excited about it. But then once you're corrected, you're like, okay, I get it. It is the Stanley Cup playoffs. You're playing for the Stanley Cup.
See, if you were an American reporter that worked for a newspaper and you covered all different sports, someone says, what are you covering tonight? I'm covering the NHL playoffs. You could get away with that.
Right.
Right.
But being in the game, it's either the playoffs because we don't talk about anything. I don't talk about anything other than hockey, or it's the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah. That's dressing room, not locker room.
Correct.
Game sheet, not box.
Sweater, not jersey.
Yeah. All the important stuff.
Exactly.
Very important details.
Yeah, really important stuff.
That people really care that much about. You were at Scotiabank last night. What did you make of that game, Maple Leafs Bruins?
The Leafs played really well. I thought they looked really sharp right from the get-go. I thought they were physical. I thought they were, of the two teams, they seemed to be much more emotionally engaged. They were much more physically engaged. And it was a close game. I mean, you know, the Bruins were not hot garbage the way the Leafs were in game two.
No.
You know,
but
they did. They were Leafs were on their toes, Bruins were on their heels. There just was a difference between. Seemed to me there was a little difference between the emotional level. Like when you think about that game, think back to all the times where you said, "Wow, that Brad Marchand is really playing well tonight." It didn't happen.
No,
he wasn't even being a pain in the butt.
Right.
That surprises me even more.
He made one or two plays, but for the most part, that line was relatively quiet. And Patrice Bergeron said post-game, his line, we need to be better, and they do. But usually in those, there was the one time where Kapanen made Marchand a little mad about something. And as Kapanen was skating off the ice, Marchand skated up to him and said something to him, but that was really about it. And I think there was one scrum in front of the net where I thought, oh, you know, Marchand's there, something might happen here, and he just turned around and skated away. And so I thought it was a relatively quiet game for the Bruins. And as I said, it's not like they were, you know, if Mitch Marner doesn't block those shots at the end, maybe one of them gets through and they tie it up and maybe they win. So it was a close game, and yet it didn't feel like a close game.
Well, the symbolism of what the Maple Leafs are trying to achieve here, actually finally, you know, yes, chopping down this tree, was evident again last night, where Zach Hyman laid out Zdeno Chara. He actually hit him hard, and he dropped the way Trevor Moore dropped him in game one.
Yeah.
I've never seen him. Like, Colton Orr got him big time. Remember in 2013, got him with a big hit and dropped him.
I've seen Tucker do it once behind the net.
He gets hit.
Right.
Like, you
but
can
he
hit
doesn't
him
drop
now.
A lot. I
no.
mean,
but he is what he is at 42 as far as size. Like, you can catch him, and if you got some velocity like Hyman does, you can get him. Moore got him because those were legal hits. It just Chara's making a play. He's like, I'm going to have to take a hit, and the legs go down.
Right.
I think it's probably, you know, I want to talk about geometry or something where, you know, if he's on one leg as opposed to the other, did he just deliver a puck or get rid of it? There's probably a precise moment where every player, even if he braces himself, he's more vulnerable to be knocked down simply because you're in, you know, the motion of skating or delivering a pass or whatever. There's got to be a split second where you're more vulnerable than you otherwise would be. And maybe they got lucky a couple of times on Chara, because you got to believe more times than not, if he's braced and ready for it, he ain't going down.
No, it's not
going
to happen. What do you think was the bigger kind of TSN turning point for the rest of this series? Was it Marner blocking the Pasternak shots, or was it Matthews finally getting on the board with a big goal?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think for Matthews, you know, when he scored, you saw the look on his face and just how fired up he was. That's good to get him that fired up, that, you know, that's what it feels like. I want to do it again. The whole team seemed to get more fired up by the Marner thing at the end. Like, as soon as he made those blocks, they were all over him when the game ended. So, that, you know, those things. But, you know, again, I always say it, and there's no momentum from game to game, and all that stuff's great, and celebrate it. But it doesn't matter the next game. It doesn't. Starting with a clean sheet.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. Steven Stamkos tonight, you talk about the pressure of the world being right on a guy. Victor Hedman won't be playing. Anton Strahlman won't be playing. Killorn won't be playing. Or he's a game-time decision.
Kucherov better be the best player on the ice, too.
Do you think Kucherov has more pressure than Stamkos?
No, because Stamkos has played the games. Kucherov put his team in a tough predicament by the best player technically in the world right now playing, putting himself out because it was a frustrated, selfish play. Kind of like what we were talking about with Nazem.
Yeah.
He just got one game instead of whatever Nazem ended up getting the rest of the series.
When all these injuries happened, it all fell to Stamkos. It's like Kucherov's gone. Okay, Stammer.
Yeah.
What do you got? Hasn't happened.
Feathers.
You know, after the game, game three, you know, he made a good point. He's like, I don't know how we don't ever get on the power play in a Stanley Cup playoff game, but they didn't. And it's kind of like you're complaining about the refs. Like, you're down 3-0. I know you were posed the question, but this is a big moment for Stamkos in his whole career. Like, I don't think he's got to drag them back in the series, but I don't think they can go down in a sweep.
Well, it's all of them. I mean, you know, they've had so much relative failure. And, you know, and we talked about this before. They didn't have any adversity in the regular season at all. But I said, it doesn't matter, because they, you know, they were up on the Blackhawks in the Cup final, and they allowed them, the Blackhawks, to run the table after they were up. I think they were up 2-1, if I remember correctly. And then in some conference finals last year, for example, they had the Capitals. They were up 3-2 on the Capitals, and they lost Game 6 and they lost Game 7, and so I was reading, they were shut out both games, I think.
Yeah.
So, and then there was another conference final where the same thing happened as last year against Washington. So now suddenly you start weaving all the threads together, and it's like, you know, couldn't close the deal against the Blackhawks, couldn't close the deal in two conference finals, and have a 3-0 lead at the end of the first period of Game 1. And then allow the Blue Jackets not just to beat you, but basically steamroll you the rest of the way. And so, you know, now all of a sudden everything comes into question. And I don't know how you handle that if you're an organization. They got to play the game tonight and we got to see what happens. But assuming they lose, whether it's tonight or the next game or whatever the case may be, if you're Julien Brisebois and John Cooper, what do you do? What do you say?
The long summer to try to wait to do it again.
Do you say, well, this group is fatally flawed? We've got, as good as these guys were in the regular season, on multiple occasions in the playoffs, this core group can't win. They can't get it done. Or do you say, you know what, let's not get stupid here. Hockey's a funny game. Stuff happens. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, and let's just stay the course and play the long game. Although playing the long game for them, you've got cap issues and you've got to start filtering out some older players and younger guys and bring younger guys in. So it's a hard one.
Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. Alex Ovechkin, Andrei Svechnikov last night. It's too bad that that's the story as opposed to Carolina steamrolling Washington last night.
What point?
Like steamrolling.
28-2 were the shots at one point.
It wasn't even close.
In the second period, I think it took them 15 minutes to get their first shot on goal in the second period.
Right.
The Caps.
Yeah, that no one's talking about that. You know, everyone's talking about the ugliness of Ovechkin, Svechnikov. We've discussed it countless times. You know, the kid, he's a kid, he's 19, but he wanted to go, he challenged them, they got their gloves off, Ovi popped them. How do you feel about it?
Well, A, because we know so much more about brain trauma now and everything else, you feel even sicker about it than you otherwise would have years ago. And I think years ago the reaction would have been, hey, you know, don't stick your hand in the cage. And the tiger or the lion might bite it off. And, you know, so, you know, and I understand what Brindamore's saying, that, you know, Ovechkin could have, you know, I'm sure guys want to fight Ovechkin lots of times and he turns them down and he decided to go a guy who's a lot younger and whatever. But at the end of the day, the rules of engagement are if, you know, and now there's debates as to who asked who to fight. I watched the video and Svechnikov says something to Ovechkin that I thought was, You want to do this?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Ovechkin's like, you want? And then Ovechkin's gloves came off first, and then it was all over. So I just think it's really unfortunate because this kid's a really good player, and he was out on his feet. We were at the Leaf game, obviously, heard very quickly on Twitter that this had happened, and some people were saying, oh, he banged his head on the ice, and now he's being helped to the dressing room. And then you watch the replay, and you can clearly see that Ovechkin basically KO'd him with a punch, and he was, like, standing up and not in his right mind, and then took another shot and then ended up hitting his head pretty hard on the ice. So you just hope he's going to be okay. But I can't jump on the Ovechkin's a really bad guy for doing this bandwagon.
No. What's he supposed to do?
I
guess he could walk away, but
if he could, you're allowed to do it. You know, and maybe if he had to do it over again, he probably would. I'm guessing, but maybe not. I don't know. But it, you know, it's kind of a lesson too that, you know, it's a dangerous business. Like we used to just take fighting. Not to get too much hyperbole here, because touch wood, nobody's suffered a fatality in a fight here. But in the figurative sense and quasi literally sometimes. You are taking your life in your hands when you go up against a guy as big and as strong as Ovechkin.
Bob, you're doing it as soon as you step on the ice.
True, and I 100% agreed. Right. But you might take that to the nth degree when, you know, like who was, remember when Rita Sivanens ended up getting knocked
that
out?
That was with us in Calgary.
Yeah.
Was it George?
It was Calgary who?
Calgary.
I forget who hit him that.
Wasn't it?
It was Vancouver.
Evidence and no,
not George LaRocque. It was.
No, I could see his face.
Anyways,
Christoph Oliwa.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I thought it was Oliwa.
Yeah,
but that was ugly.
Yeah, when you see those ones, that's when it reinforces. But those points, 100% true. Like people don't realize I think, fully realize we all enjoy it for the entertainment spectacle, but it's still a gladiatorial game.
Yeah, or just and, skating 100 miles an hour in a corner. Yeah, somebody gives you a little cross check.
It's a slippery surface surrounded by hardboards and really big guys. And I said this before when we talked about when Tom Wilson lowers the boom on somebody and hits a guy in the head or even just a body, a clean body check. You know, standing on the ice on the Stanley Cup final after the cup had been presented, and I'm just standing, I'm 5 foot nine, I'm 5 foot nothing. But Tom Wilson on skates is like 6'5", 6'6". And I'm just looking at the size of him and I'm thinking, oh my God. And then you see how fast Tom Wilson can skate and you do the math and you're like, that big, that fast, and getting hit by that guy. Like, yeah. That could be a life-altering, figuratively life-ending activity.
Absolutely.
Steve McIntyre.
Steve McIntyre.
I remember him. So he was with the Oilers, Ivan Ensworth, with us in Calgary. Yeah. That was, I remember.
Well, and it's interesting how, you know, the outcome of the fight obviously is going to determine the conversation. Because a lot of people have been pointing out, if Svechnikov does that to Ovechkin, it's like, how dare you, the rookie, take on a legend like that?
There'll be a lot of that.
And a Kadri and Thornton, remember?
No respect.
Remember
and if,
Kadri
and if they both tagged each other and everybody came out of it all good, everybody would have been, oh, that's awesome.
The young Russian.
Two Russian, young Russian cub against the old Russian lion, and look at that, you know.
Or you got Ryan Reeves and Evander Kane.
Yeah.
Where they two heavies or close to it. Kane's almost a heavy. Great fight. Now they're just carving each other in the media, and everyone's like, this is awesome. I hope they go again tonight.
I just worry that Svechnikov's brother is wearing a tracksuit somewhere, and like, is he like a dangerous guy?
No, not really. But
Russia or something?
No. He plays for the Detroit Red Wings farm team. He played some NHL games. He's injured. He's a good hockey player, and I guess he posted something on Instagram.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
He was in like a Freddy Krueger outfit, and it was like kind of quasi threatening Ovechkin.
Yeah,
like
straighten you out.
Like 1-2. Freddy's coming for you, and there's a picture of him, and
I was wondering if this guy's waiting back in Russia in a tracksuit.
This is not something the league likes to see because when the whole threatening, making promises, not a good idea.
That's a bit of a problem.
That's
the guy's over here. Like, he's not back home in Russia.
No,
like,
exactly.
With in the Wild West, put it that way.
All right, Bob. Good stuff.
All right, fellas.
See you down there at Scotiabank tomorrow. You guys are going to be back down there, I'm assuming.
We are.
How cold were you last night outside doing your sports?
Not at all. You guys are like
soft as butter.
Oh, no, soft.
The TV.
Well, do you know that the TV studio, they actually were smart enough to close the door so there's nothing breathing?
Oh, you guys had it wide open on the backside?
Oh, we were in a wind tunnel.
Of course.
But they, for some reason, they had brought a jib camera in there. I don't know why.
For our show.
And it was like just going up and down. Like, there was no reason for it. So the arm of the jib was at the wide open door. So it was the North Pole just blowing in. There was no reason
It was toasty warm. Well, it wasn't toasty warm. It was cool, but it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Classic. Too.
You're talking to a guy who on the night the Montreal Forum closed, it was about a gazillion below zero. And Gord Miller and I, we had an hour pregame show before the weirdest thing, the Montreal Forum, the last game of the Montreal Forum was the Dallas Stars versus the Montreal Canadiens on a Monday night on TSN.
Yeah.
And they had us set up in the park across the road, outdoors. So just a table, two-man table, cameras. And because the shot was the old Forum, the hockey stick escalators through the glass.
Right.
That's what they wanted. And so for like an hour, we were outside. Then we did the intermissions there in a post-game show.
That's tough.
Not as bad as the Heritage Classic in Edmonton, but that's another story.
Yeah, right. I felt like we weren't that bad. It was bad.
It was cold.
We'll be all right. Anyway, we'll see
you. All right, boys. Thanks.
There's Bob McKenzie, your hockey insider. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the Raptors game tonight. Raptors Magic Game 2. You can hear it on TSN 1050 and watch it on TSN. All right, the Scotiabank Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer Tournament will be returning on September 28th to Woodbine Racetrack. It's a dawn to dusk road hockey marathon that anyone can play in. If you are a CEO or an executive of a company, talk to your colleagues and enter a corporate team. Employees, talk to your coworkers and bosses about registering as a company. Thousands will play to raise millions for the Princess Margaret Cancer Center. To register, visit teamuptoconquercancer.ca. Raptors in action tonight. Feels like a must win. Feels like a must win. And I feel pretty good about it.
In the hockey series, what happens when you go down 0-2 on the road?
It's a little early.
Problems.
It's a little early, but just knowing the basketball world and how much home court means to these teams.
Absolutely. And I know Kawhi wasn't here in the past, and Danny Green wasn't here, and Marc Gasol wasn't here.
The vibe was.
The vibe was, and the anxiety. Like, it'll be a weird vibe in Scotiabank tonight. You know, if they're losing going into the fourth quarter, or it's a close game into the fourth, it'll be.
But they were up.
It'll be
by,
quiet.
They were down for a bit, and then they were up by like 7. And yep. I thought, they look in good shape, and then all of a sudden, they're not in good shape.
No, they weren't.
Somebody did pick Orlando, one of the NBA analysts.
Yeah.
That on ESPN. I can't remember who it was. Former player.
Yeah.
No, and listen, he said they played so well down the stretch. You know, defensively, they're very good. They defended really well.
And the season matchup, too, right?
Yeah, won 2-2 in the season. They've been shooting the three ball well, which they did again on Saturday. Like, they really shot the lights out. You can't, like, Orlando's not a terrible team.
Right.
But the Raptors are an elite team. Orlando's not an elite team, regardless of what happened on Saturday afternoon, regardless of what they did the final 25 games of the season. Get Kawhi's minutes. Kyle Lowry's got to find a rhythm. You got to be better defensively as well. You know, switch offs and stuff. You got to communicate. Marc Gasol got burned. You know, that DJ Augustine three left him wide open. Can't happen. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Columbus is paying $2. Big underdog
you're on
at
Columbus
home.
Columbus tonight?
I'm on Columbus.
For a sweep?
Hedman's not playing. Stroman's not playing.
Up 3-0.
But Stroman hasn't played the whole time.
That doesn't matter. He's not playing tonight.
I know.
And I think Alex Killorn, the shoot could come out.
He's on Expedia?
I could see him going out for a twirl, the old game time decision. If he bails, they're getting crushed.
You think he's
I think
a
if
swing
he
boat.
Play, yes, I do, because I think it's a mentality thing. If he says, I can't go, he's saying, what's the point of me playing? I'm in Vegas tomorrow night. If he plays and grinds, then they might win. But
my coach and junior, or my captain and junior, wanted to strangle me. We were down 3 Cobb. I shaved my playoff beard. He got on the bus. He was like, what the hell?
Bar play.
Don't worry about it, Mike. Yeah. We're out of here.
Just getting ready for after the game. Didn't want the rash.
Hey, man, we all know what's coming. You read the tea leaves every once in a while. Alex Killorn is well shaven.
What if he
and he's
shows?
Not like I said, tonight. I want to switch up the momentum.
Right. Winnipeg's paying $220. They love that barn. They love playing in St.
Louis. So does Patrick Laine, your buddy there.
I love Patrick Laine. You know how I feel about him. I'm on Winnipeg tonight, and I'm on Vegas at home. I think Vegas wins. Throw down 20. You can score 132. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Raptors coming up on TSN Radio tonight. We're back at Scotiabank, Maple Leaf Square, tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Join us.